Was everybody able to get online the downloads, the PDFs, and able to get access to that? So, is anybody new here tonight that wasn't here last week? All right. A handful of folks. Welcome. It's fine to come in the middle. It's not going to be a problem. We covered a lot of material, I think. I don't know. By some definitions, it might have been a lot of material last week. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. So we'll go back and kind of review some of the stuff a little bit, and you'll be fine. But did anybody, I'll tell you, we'll start out. I do have notes, cell phones on vibrate or sleep mode or whatever it is we need to. And then I'll tell you what, we're going to start out with just a simple meditation. We'll get everybody started right off the bat, okay? So if this is your first time, don't worry if nothing happens. Like one of my students in prison said, when's it going to happen? So what we're going to try to do is just sit and just focus. You might focus on your breathing. You might count your breath. That was one of the meditations we did last time. Just follow the breath all the way in and all the way out. And just count as high as you can get. You know, if you get to 10 or 20 without losing focus, and it's, you don't want to just be counting in your head, but you want to be able to focus on your breath the whole time you're counting. If you lose track, just start all over again. And that's okay. That's the whole idea, is to kind of bring your attention back to something, right? In this case, your breathing. We also did a bare attention meditation last time, which is you just focus on your breath. You can either focus on the sensation of your abdomen rising and falling, or focus on the sensation of the air going in and out of your nose, the end of your nose, so cool air going in, warm air going out, whatever's most comfortable. But again, the idea is to try to maintain your focus on your breath and catch yourself when your mind wanders. And I would guarantee that your mind is going to wander. Something is going to catch it and begin to pull you off of your breath. And what you want to do is try to catch yourself when you're in that off on some other thought process, and then gently, gently bring it back. Someone says it's like paper training a puppy, right? When they get off the paper, you just kind of bring them back and set them back on the paper. So the same with your thoughts. Just bring them back gently to your breath, okay? So, and we had a 7-point posture that we talked about last time, and that's available in the download too. You can get the list of that. Like Jill said, you're welcome to go from the cushion to the chair or back and forth. If you're sitting on a chair, you want to sit with your feet pretty flat on the floor. Of course, you can't do that if you're sitting on a cushion, but you sit however you're comfortable with your legs. You want to sit with your back as straight as possible so that you're not, usually in a chair, we try not to use the back of the chair rest if we can. So sit up a little bit and picture your spine like a stack of coins, if you will. Top of your head, like the crown of your head kind of pulled up a little, and that'll allow your chin or jaw to kind of fall forward a little. Your hands should be comfortable in your lap. The normal kind of traditional pose is your right hand inside your left hand with your thumbs touching, but whatever is comfortable is ideal. Your eyes should be closed or slightly open, and then your tongue sets at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth. Okay. So I'm going to take a few breaths in and out, just kind of release, you know, anything that you've got going on in your head. Try to let go of the sound of the train and noises around you. And then after you've taken 2 or 3 big breaths in and out, just start watching your breath. And allow your mind just to settle on your breath. And if your mind's wandered, gently bring it back to the breath. Okay, how do we do with that? Mind go off different directions, or are you able to stay focused, absolutely focused on your breathing, right? How many of you, I mean, it's hard to even keep track of how many times our mind gets distracted during that process. How many of you, well, you don't have to admit this necessarily, but we're way off somewhere when I said, if you've wandered off, come on back, okay? It's easy to kind of go away. So that's the whole, that's kind of the purpose. I mean, that's really what it boils down to in these type of meditations is being able to develop the ability to focus our mind and maintain that focus, you know, to develop some control. There's a, I don't know, is our meditation talk that might be outside. There's a picture out there with elephants going up a hill. It's out in the lobby, but it's the idea is that you know, when you look at it, it's different stages of meditation, and it starts out our mind is like an elephant, right? And it has control of us. It kind of takes control. So we're trying to work on being able to tame that elephant. And then we can channel it. Once we've got it tamed, we can channel it for things that are more positive and pull it away from things that are negative. So we'll talk more about that. For those of you that were here last week, did you have any feedback from, well, I'll ask, and you know, one of the obstacles is not doing meditation during the weeks. It'd be during the days in between these classes, but were there obstacles or issues or things that you may have encountered if you tried doing some meditation during the last week? Or any stories you want to share? Or I've got to chew up a few minutes here with this stuff, so.
I wasn't here last week, but what I always have trouble with is counting the breath without trying to control it.
Okay. So you're when you count, you find that you're controlling the breathing, okay? Yeah, that's a challenge, isn't it? That'll just come with time, though, too, as the more you do it. So, thank you.
Well, feeding off of that, I just want to know, what exactly is the purpose of counting?
What is the purpose of counting? Is that the question?
Yes.
Anybody want to answer that? Yes, please.
Thank you for waiting.
So my understanding is the purpose of counting is so that it kind of calms your mind. So, you know, I have like the crazy monkey mind and like I'm like, oh, I've got this appointment and I've got this project and my four kids are at home and somebody's called me 5 minutes ago. And that's what my mind normally does, like every second of the day. But in trying to slow it down and like think about your breath in and your breath out, the counting is kind of slowing things down so that you have something to focus on. Like usually I make it to like 5 and then I'm distracted and then I count to 5 again. Yes.
Oh, that's fine.
No, 5 is really good. That's where I'm like stuck at 5.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get frustrated. That's something that you'll learn too is that, you get frustrated with it. But,
or I can't count that high, one of the two.
You've got to be easy with yourself. And like she said, the point is, you know, if we can maintain our focus on our breath as we go in and as we go out, and then we put the number on it, it just gives us something to concentrate on. Otherwise, our mind, you know, it just gets pulled off real easy. So the objective is to try to stay concentrated on that. The breath is easy. You know, some of the meditations you might focus on an object. You know, you can focus on a stone or a flower or a flame, and there's a lot of other things you can kind of concentrate on. The breath is convenient because you've always got it with you, right? And when you stop breathing, you know, you can stop meditating for the most part. So, you know, it's always there, right? You've always got that going for you. So by concentrating and accounting, like she says, gives you something to focus on, so. Somebody else had a question? Yes, ma'am.
Thanks. My problem is I could meditate in the morning and I could meditate in the evening. But if I forget to meditate in the morning and I meditate at 1 or 2 in the afternoon, I fall asleep. I literally fall asleep.
Okay.
And I'm focusing and then I just get so tired that I roll onto the bed. That's how tired I get.
Okay.
But not in the morning. Not in the morning. I'm fine. At night I'm fine. It's that 1 in the afternoon.
Okay. Is that normally a low time for you?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. I mean, even when you're not doing meditations, just that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like I want to take a nap.
Yeah, that, and so I would just avoid that time.
That's what I said to myself.
Yeah.
So don't do it at 1 or 2 o'clock.
No.
But it's so relaxing that it puts me in this beautiful
sleep. Well, if your goal is to fall asleep, I mean, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Were you here last week?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. So one of the things I mentioned, I know some people will try to, like they're laying in bed, you know, we did a body scan and do something that'll relax them, and they fall asleep. And that is an okay way to fall asleep, is to use a process like that. But you don't want that to be the basis of your meditation practice, because then when you sit, you're going to have a tendency to want to fall asleep. So you want to find some place. The goal of this is different than relaxation, because we're trying to stay fully alert during the process, you know. And that goes back to counting. It gives us something to focus on, but we want to maintain that high level of focus if we can, okay?
Have another question.
Okay.
Sometimes when I meditate, not all the time, it gets so deep, I get scared, and I bring myself back.
Okay.
Where I want to stay at that place, but I get nervous, and then my heart starts pounding.
Yeah.
Because it went to a place I wasn't familiar with.
So, another thing that'll happen, often happens over time, is, you know, sometimes I have, you know, those little snow globes you see, you shake things up, right? And I'll use a jar of water with sand or something like that. You know, our minds normally like that thing all shooken up, And once the little particles begin to settle, there's all sorts of stuff in there, in that water that we see that we didn't see before. But it was always there. It's like sediment in water, and you'll begin to see all the crap that's in the water that you, you know, the old tires, whatever's in the bottom of the lake. So that stuff will kind of surface. My understanding is just kind of keep working on it slowly. You know, if you need to bring yourself out of that, that's fine. There is a lot of research that supports meditation with people that have, you know, post-traumatic stress disorders and things like that, where they can control the amount of exposure they have to some of the things that scare them. So there's probably other people here that you could talk to that give you more advice on that, but, you know, things may pop up. Things may pop up as you get more and more involved with this. So, anything else? Any other comments or thoughts? Thank you. Those of you that did bare attention meditation, where we just focused, kind of broaden our focus on our breath and just kind of stayed on that as kind of a mindfulness thing, as opposed to a concentration. How are those two things different? Do you see that as being a different type of awareness? Or is it something maybe, excuse me, it's probably not anything you've ever thought about before, but, you know, those are two different types of awareness that you begin to kind of develop. I might have used the example last week. I apologize if I repeat myself here, but when we first learned to drive or focus on things, we were focused on the components. Yes, here comes Mike with a... Mike with Mike.
I don't know if this is exactly what you're talking about, but I found that last week, compared to this week, when you're doing just the free thought as opposed to actually counting your breath, it was a lot. It was very difficult for me the first time, having nothing that I could concentrate on.
Okay. So not having
letting my mind wander. Then when I had the counting of breath to rely on to kind of focus my mind.
Okay. You might have mentioned that last week too, that it was easier to, or somebody had said that, it was easier to focus on her breathing rather than just kind of letting things go.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That would be true. We're going to do a bare attention. We're going to do a mind like the ocean or mind like the sky kind of meditation here, where, again, the idea is to kind of broaden your awareness, and then you just watch thoughts as they kind of float across, okay? So having something to anchor your concentration to kind of build a little different muscle, maybe, than just the bare attention meditation. So, and I can see where that would be easier. Maybe with some of the ones we do today, it might the bare attention might end up being a little easier. But it's a different perspective too. Okay, so you know, when you're driving, when you first learn to drive, you're focused pretty intently on all of the things you have to do. But then as you became proficient with that, you began to just become more aware of everything that was around you. And then we kind of lost that awareness too as we got more proficient with it. We don't even think about driving anymore. We don't think about most of the stuff that we do anymore. So a lot of times that bare attention is more what they would call mindfulness. You know, they might just use that term to describe just kind of that broad perspective, you know. But the concentration, we're trying to drill in on something. And we'll do some analytical meditations here in the coming sessions that give you something when you build up your concentration, then they give you something to concentrate on beside your breath. And it might be something like compassion or empathy, or, you know, there's impermanence is a very common meditation topic, that everything is changing. Death is, oddly enough, is a real good meditation concept, something to focus on, and the Buddhists practice that a fair amount. So, and that goes along with our impermanence, right? Everything just changing all the time. So, can you see where those two skills though become complementary too, where they kind of can go hand in hand? You know, as you can develop those two. So what is the mind? The whole idea here is to become familiar with our mind. We don't often question that, but it's kind of clear. The Buddhists will say it's clear knowing. Is it the same as awareness? Or it's in the nature of awareness? I mean, we taste things, we see things, so that information gets into our brain, but our mind does stuff with that once that information's in there, right? And we label things that we like and dislike. That's not inherent to the nature of whatever it is we're seeing, or tasting, right? I use broccoli and mushrooms as an example. The people in here are the people in here that hate broccoli or hate mushrooms. And there's other people in here that love mushrooms and love broccoli. Is that inherent in the broccoli or the mushrooms? And people that hate it will say, yeah, it is. Right? They're evil things. They've got this flavor or taste, but we decide whether it's good or bad, right? And you can do this about anything. Chocolate, vanilla, whatever, you know. We make those decisions. So we label things good and bad. So the information comes into our mind, and then we create a story around it. Yes, ma'am. Go. Microphone on its way. Chris has the left one.
Thank you. So I guess I was just thinking right now, we cannot label a flavor like as inherent, like vanilla flavor. Some people like it, some people don't. I understand this. However, we do have genetic differences, which you can label this person has this gene, this person doesn't have this gene. So maybe we cannot label the flavor, but we can label the mind, that actually there is inherent differences, but in the mind. Not in the, you know what, you see what I'm saying?
No, say it again. Sorry.
So, broccoli.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't like it, some people don't. The reason some people may like it is because their genetic code favors them to like it.
Okay.
Whereas there are some other people who maybe their genetic code, because we're different, just don't like it. So, you may be able to pinpoint that there is a difference, like inherent difference in the, you know, within minds.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't like broccoli because my genetic code is like this. But actually, so there is an inherent difference, you know, in the flavor. Not in the broccoli, but actually, you know, there's a reason why I don't like broccoli. It's not just, you know, my mind, how it preserves it.
So you're saying there's a genetic reason why you don't like broccoli, or it could be theoretically.
It could be.
Okay.
But I mean, like broccoli, there's other things, you know, like alcohol.
Yeah.
If my parents drank alcohol, it's very likely, you know, well, you know,
that almost,
maybe I will, you know, want to drink alcohol.
A predisposition.
Predisposition.
But addictions have different. Yeah, I guess we don't go too far down that path, but addictions have some predispositions, but just the like or dislike flavors, even things like pain and pleasure are just sensations that are brought in, and then our mind makes some decision on that. You know, our Geshe-la used the example of someone with significant piercings. You know, to his mind, that's painful, right? And most people would agree to some level that there's some pain involved with that, yet that person found that very pleasurable, you know? So, yeah. Anybody else have anything they want to add? I think you had a valid point, but...
I just never know, like, when to think of actually it's the mind or it's the genetic code of the person.
Okay.
Because, yes, I can control my mind, but can I really control every single aspect of my mind?
Okay.
Like, if I don't know, like, I can't even think of something, but, I mean, because there's also an inheritance or like something in it that, you know, makes me who I am. I understand it's my mind, but
right.
It's not just my mind. It's also like the genetic cause of my parents.
Yeah. There's causes and conditions, other
yeah.
kind of things that play into that. Okay. But our mind, oh, sorry, there's something else back there. Go ahead. Another question.
That's like a really neat thought. But I don't want to necessarily go down all the way into it, but I was just thinking of the example of how you're trying to make the point that the mind is the prism through which physical phenomenon is interpreted. Mm-hmm. And I just think of a kaleidoscope versus a telescope versus glasses versus your retina. And the object itself, sort of, as an analogy to the taste of broccoli or something like that, exists, and we decide how it is that we see that object,
right,
based upon that prism. And so I think that I don't know how to sort of actionize that insight at all, but I think that it is really liberating to think that there is a way that you can actually step away from what you think is the inherent way that things have to be.
Right. Yeah, it's an interpretive thing, and I think for argument for this class, I mean, there are some classes where they get pretty deep into that, but for this nature, I think we want to recognize that we talked about this last week. We add suffering on to something that may be distasteful or something we don't like. And we exaggerate the pleasure of things too, right? We see things that we want in this attachment. We exaggerate the good qualities of that. Oh, if I have this, I know I'll be happy or whatever it is. And then once you get it, there's a drop off in that sensation, you know, and then the car gets dinged or there's a dent or whatever it is. And down the road, now it's old again, you know. So it's this stuff that we kind of lay on top of the things that are occurring out there that our mind does. And we exaggerate the negative stuff too. We use the example of somebody cutting us off on the road or somebody doing something that it might have just been a mindless act, but we create a whole negative story around that. And we play those stories over and over again to make them. We emphasize them, right? We meditate on the negative stuff. We rehearse those over and over and over again to make them bigger and bigger. And that in and of itself has an impact on our physical well-being too, right? Because every time we replay those negative stories, we increase our blood pressure and cortisol and all that other kind of stuff, and we end up having problems from that. So the idea is that our mind, you know, rather than putting a story on something or taking a negative story and how eventually, you know, you can take a negative story and turn that around as something positive and we kind of reframe that story if you can. That's kind of our goal. And it may not get you to like broccoli if you don't, but, you know, it's the other stuff, the other kind of stories that we work with that really add suffering to our lives in a normal state. Okay. Let's do another short meditation. Did anybody have any other comments? Anything? Thank you both. All right, so this is this will be, and this is another one that's available on your in the downloads. So we'll get in our 7-point posture, feet on the floor, seat firmly in the seat, back straight like a stack of coins, top of the head up. Chin down a little bit, your hands comfortably in your lap. Your eyes closed or slightly open is fine too. And then your tongue resting at the roof of your mouth behind your teeth, front teeth. And then take a few breaths, big breaths in and out. And set your motivation for being here. You all decided to come here tonight to learn more about your mind. And that's not going to just benefit yourself, but may benefit people around you as you learn these exercises. And then just focus on your breathing, the bare attention, without counting. Just watch your breath go in and out. And then loosen your concentration a little, just slightly. And kind of emphasize just the element of mindfulness. Just awareness. And then allow your mind to be attentive and observant to whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is, positive or negative or anything. The idea is you don't want to identify with the mental elements. Just observe them. Think of your mind like the sky. Clarity, spaciousness, wide open. And you're just an observer. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sun, but the sky doesn't get upset, doesn't identify with the clouds. It's just there. They come and they go. So your thoughts are like the clouds. If a thought arises, you can just place it on a cloud and let it float by. Were you able to be aware of your mind like the sky and see thoughts pass across like clouds without getting entangled in the thought or the emotion? Emotions, they consider emotions very similar to thoughts. It's still mental activity. Or did you get pulled into one of those clouds and your mind wander off? There's another one that's very similar that's in the handouts as well, where you do your mind's like an ocean, which is my preference. So if you can imagine, you know, on the top of the ocean, it's all a lot of waves and stuff, but as you go down deeper, it's calmer. So sometimes I envision like, you know, those big aquariums where you're down underground and the whole glass is front. So if you picture your mind like the water itself, okay, not like you're watching the water, but that it is the water, and then the fish and things that swim by are just the thoughts and emotions that kind of come and go, let them kind of do their thing. So the idea is not to get pulled into it, but to see them, you know. So the idea is that you see those thoughts and emotions, but you stay unattached to them, okay, and begin to kind of separate yourself and your awareness from those things that crop up in your head that come up, those thoughts, okay? So were you able to do that with the clouds a little bit? So the delusions that we have, we talked a little bit about some of the negative thoughts. So we have things like anger. That's a pretty common one for people, you know. Anger, jealousy, arrogance, greed. Those are kind of the bigger ones that arise. So with practice, the idea is that you begin to develop this space. So, you know, you can see these thoughts and emotions arise, but rather than let your mind get carried away with them, you just observe them. Because what happens when we normally, our minds get carried away with those things? Pardon me? We're telling stories. And then what happens when we have enough stories going through our head? When we confront the person that we're talking the story about, you know? Then words come out. Or something else happens, an action maybe, right? So, you know, if you follow, you know, our thoughts lead to our actions, lead to how to relate to other people. Our thoughts, you know, become the speech. Our thoughts then become the action. So if we can see the thought come up, but not act out on it, right? So I think of something I want to say to that person, but rather than say it, I just think it. I've made a big stride forward, right? How would things change if some of the stuff that came out of our mouths or some of our actions, we just kind of held on to those a little bit? Yeah. Our teacher Geshe-la told a story once about a couple that were having trouble. They were always fighting. And the wife says, you know, as soon as my husband comes home from work, we start. It starts in. She said, I couldn't take it. So she saw some specialist, and he gave her some medicine. And he said, you know, when your husband comes home, you take a tablespoon of this medicine, but don't swallow it. Just hold it in your mouth. She said it worked. You know, after a period of time, it worked. There were no more fights. So, you know, it's a two-person tangle thing that goes on there, right? And a lot of it is just not engaging, you know? We just don't engage. We decide not to. Are you going to say something else, please?
Something that I've heard somewhere, I don't know if I read it properly, it said when anger arises, what's going on in your brain? Anger lasts like 10 seconds. When we stay angry for like 10 minutes, it's because we're enforcing the anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this really helped me. Like, I think that same day I was getting angry. I'm like, oh, it's been like a minute, so I'm holding on to it.
Yeah.
And just kind of like let it like go. So when I get angry, I'm thinking that I'm forcing myself to be angry, and there is not much reason to be angry.
Right.
So just something.
No, that's very true. We talked about two arrows, right, the last time, or two darts, second dart. You know, something happens that makes us angry, but then it's that we take that own arrow and we keep stabbing ourselves with it. So we play those stories over and over again, and they continue. So with these kind of meditations now, with the mind like the ocean or mind like the sky, you begin to see these things like anger crop up, and you create some space. You know, right? The idea behind this is I create some space between my awareness and that emotion or that thought that may have spurred that emotion. And just watch it. Maybe just let it go. All right? Just let it go. historically, there's a trigger and then a reaction. So there's a trigger. There's some mindfulness, and then I get to choose my response. It's up to me to choose how I respond to that. Okay? And that can make a huge difference in our lives when we begin responding to things a little bit differently. That's when you begin to recognize you've got some control and you can gain some control, you know? And there's opportunities around for you to practice this all the time. You know, it's easy to do this while we're sitting here on our cushion and watching the thoughts pass by. But, you know, when we're in those situations that actually cause that anger to arise, it makes it a little bit more of a challenge. So and usually when we get, and this comes from dealing with folks in prison, and a lot of the guys that were in prison were there because of anger issues, right? So, you know, it was never the trigger and then rage. It felt like that to them, right? Like it went from here to bam, there. And next thing I know, you know, he was laying on the floor or whatever it was. But there's always this irritation, you know, frustration, irritation, and it kind of builds up anger and then it's rage. For those guys, right, they use the term short fuse. But you'll notice that in yourself. There's things that irritate you. And you probably know what they are. There are things with people that you're close to that irritate you. There may be things like at the store waiting in lines that irritate you. There's things that are out there that you get an opportunity to practice with, you know. So, you know, get yourself in the long, that's what I do. I get myself in the longest line at the grocery store because I hate that, right? And then, all right. Here comes that thing. Here comes that frustration, you know. And watch the people around. She's taking too long. But, you know, you watch what happens with your mind when you're in those situations. And then you can begin to kind of control how you respond to that. Or choose not to respond to it, you know, which is what ideally you would do, right? Or respond appropriately. So you have the choice to do that. And that's when you begin taming the elephant. You know, you begin to get in front of that elephant and begin to kind of tame what's taking place. So, anybody have anything they want to add to that? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I want to share an experience I had during the week. To me, I feel like it's hard for me to know my anger, because normally I would be very nice to people, and if I feel angry, I would deny it like automatically first, so I would not realize that I was angry. And I feel like sometimes I need to I started to write when I feel like physically uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
I will start to write and start to express my feelings, and after that, if I meditate, it will work. If I don't do that, I will always feel it physically, and I don't even know what is happening to me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get it out.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good advice. And that helps. then you can do the meditation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because that thought's there, right? That emotion is there. And part of this whole thing, watching it like a cloud or a fish, I mean, we're observing it. We're just not going to act on it. It's just not, and it's separate from my awareness of it. Because you are aware of it, right? It's got to be separate. It's not you. If you're the one that's aware, then, and you're aware of that anger, then that anger can't be you, right? People say, well, I'm just angry. Well, no, you're experiencing anger and you're acting out on that. But that's something that, that's something, they'll say it's habits, right? We've got these habits of mind that we've built over years where we practice from a very young age of getting what we wanted or doing something where anger served us well, so we got better and better and better at it. We practice that like we practice playing a piano or practice anything else. We just got really good at it. So we're trying to unlearn some of that and practice new habits that we can begin to develop. I think we talked a little bit last week about developing these neural pathways. The more you practice these things, the easier it is for them to kind of come up, right? These neurological connections that we formed over a lifetime, it's just a pathway that's built into there. There was an example of it's called Hebbian learning cycle, and the example I read was, if you could imagine, there was four pastures, and you have a sheep, you're herding sheep, and you go from A, B, and C, but you never go to D, right? You just go A, B, and C. So every time the sheep walk over that path, they make the path more prominent, right? And so then the next time around, they follow that path because it's prominent. That's what kind of happens in our head. And if we want to get into pasture D, which might be where we want to take ourselves neurologically, we have to kind of force the sheep to go off there a few times before they begin to kind of develop that path. So that gets pulled in that loop. And it may be one other of the pastures we want to stop going to. We have to kind of keep that from happening. And that'll kind of fade away. So we build those neurological pathways. And we've practiced those all of our lives. The negative ones, we have a tendency to practice negative ones. But so now we're going to try to begin practicing some of the more positive things. And it's practice. I mean, it's hard. It's hard work. And you have to put yourself in a position where you have to kind of be challenged by that a little bit to get your mind to begin thinking of it. But then it becomes easier and easier and easier the more you begin to kind of develop those positive qualities. You know? It's a matter of turning your focus. I had another experience. This came to mind on the other day. I got a flu shot last year. You all get flu shots? You might get. So when, you know, you roll your sleeve up, this is the pharmacist did it, right? The pharmacists are giving flu shots now. You roll your sleeve up and I'm sitting there. And you know, I watched my mind during that process and I intentionally focused on something else, you know? I wasn't focusing like I did when I was a little kid on this needle, this huge needle going through my arm, you know? But I, you know, as a kid, you're focusing on that. But as I grew older, I realized that I've intentionally brought my mind to something else entirely. And even though it only lasted, 30 seconds or whatever it was, I was able to control my mind not to think about something negative. Maybe I wasn't thinking about something positive, but I wasn't thinking about something negative like this huge needle going my arm. That's what we're doing with some of these meditations, is we're trying to build our focus up and take it away from something negative and begin to focus on something positive and develop that over a longer period of time. So, all right. We have a little group project. It's in the outline. So I want you to break up into pairs or groups. I don't know, threes, fours, whatever you want to do. And think about an experience that may have occurred, something, a problem, something negative that maybe happened relatively recently that you're willing to share with somebody. Or, you know, you can even think about something that's going to come in the future, because the pre-framing is as important as reframing. This, we're going to go back either way. Pick something that was a problem and look at how, if you would have handled that differently, how that might have turned out. Okay? Yeah. So why don't we do that? Break up in little groups and find something you're willing to share. Doesn't have to be major. And I'll ring the bell when we're done. All right. All right. Was that discussion useful? Is there anything anybody wants to share? You don't have to, but any really good story? Did you see opportunities where things might have been different had you reacted differently? Yeah. Now, the challenge is doing that going forward. You know, in a rearview mirror, sometimes it's easy. Think, oh, I could have done differently. But, you know, how do you project that forward? And when you see those opportunities come up again. Otherwise, you'll sit and look back on them and do the same exercise, right? So the practice comes going forward.
Hi, guys. Name is Hillary. So I deal with, like, depression, anxiety, and something I went through is, like, being suicidal and not, like, asking for help. And if I did that earlier, I wouldn't be, like, where I am today with such a big struggle. But the bright side of it is now I'm in, like, well, we'll be starting next week in group therapy and like, reaching out, I think, is a big step from that. And, you know, reaching out to churches and that kind of thing. So, yes, there's a dark side of it, but there's also beauty and light coming from it. So.
Good. All right. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that, having the courage to share that, too.
I think just in response to you a little bit and just in general is, you know, I think we all have, all that craziness that happens in our minds and those perceptions that we're completely alone or people don't understand us. And my transgender daughter attempted suicide a couple times and self-harm and things like that. And it's a scary place to be. It's a scary place to be for a mom when you're sleeping on the outside of the room praying that you're alive in the morning and those kinds of things. But to have the presence of mind to stop and say, you know what, there are people out there that care about me and that are going to pay attention is a huge thing. And so I think you're very brave.
Thank
Sorry.
You. Good. Thank you. Anybody else have anything they want to share? So, you know, the thing is that hopefully you slowly begin to realize, or you fully realize, is that it's all, you know, there's so much that we don't think we have control over. And through this practice, you begin to develop the understanding you have control over all sorts of stuff. Maybe not stuff out there, but right, you have huge control over what's going on inside your head. And when you gain that understanding that you have that kind of control, it changes all sorts of things, you know. It's huge, the things that have changed. You realize, too, that, you know, people are chasing sources of happiness that lie outside them, and there really isn't anything out there that gives any kind of lasting happiness. You know, you think about things like, you know, things that we buy, food, vacations, just about anything external that, you know, we seek that for some level of pleasure, but once we have it, that pleasure doesn't have any lasting value to it. You know, think of something that you bought recently. And sometimes you can think about what you felt like going into that before you made that purchase and what your mind was doing. And then you buy that thing and you're excited about it, maybe for a brief period of time, but then it kind of loses its luster and you're looking right away for the next fix, so to speak, out there, right? The next thing out there that's going to create some level of happiness. And so we often go through our lives just kind of chasing after this stuff until at some point, hopefully, we wake up and realize maybe it's not out there, you know? But it's all inside of our head. And it's all things that we can control. Were you going to say something? I guess.
Hi. So I think one of the things that I struggle with is that I react a lot. And I had two different things going on last week. One of them I was very emotional about and very hurt by. And it wasn't like I could take space because it was at my job. So, you know, I had to be there. I had to be around the people that I felt like had hurt me. I had to be, you know, show up the next day. The other situation, which I ended up handling very, I like to say, more detached from and kind of in a, I guess, grounded way, I had a few days to, like, separate myself from that, and I talked to some other friends and kind of got some advice and, you know, reached out to people, and that helped me. But I don't always have the, you know, we don't always have that opportunity. So I'm just kind of wondering, does anyone have any experience in, like, when you're in the midst of something, you don't have the time to, you know, because I just feel like I'm so reactive sometimes. If I can get away from it, then I'm fine. But it's like, it takes me so long to come back down to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's probably like that rage I was talking about with some of the folks that we've worked with. You can't begin doing this practice when you're in the midst of that rage. Your mind's too far gone, right? It's too pulled in. You cannot pull away from that. So that's why you do this on your cushion and you find little things that you can practice with. There's opportunities all around for you to practice with those. You start with the smaller stuff. And the bigger stuff will get easier and easier and easier till at some point you will be in the midst of it and you'll be able to just kind of not get pulled into it. I don't know the circumstances, but you know, you'll be able to separate yourself from it at that time. And it'll happen when you don't expect it either. You know, you do these practices over and over again. And it's such a gradual process that you don't recognize until you're into something that you realize, wow, I didn't react the way I would normally react under that circumstance. We had some members here once talking about, they had some family issues going on, sisters or something that, you know, they hadn't spoken in years. Or they always, I think it was at holidays, they always fight. And so, you know, she found that over the year of practice, she said, and afterwards she said, this holiday, I just chose not to get engaged in the argument or whatever it was normal. And she goes, my sister even called me out on it, says, aren't we going to fight? You know, it gotten to be such a custom, you know? And she said, I actually had a good time with my sister and I enjoyed her. We just didn't. And it only took her not to engage in it, right? Now, had she engaged in it, her sister would have gladly gone along with that dance. But having chosen not to, she didn't. And so it was a gradual. She was surprised to see that, you know, she just decided it wasn't worth. It was just going to be that cloud, just going to go away. It's not worth the misery to get involved with that. So that takes time. That'll take time. And you know, you'll be in situations that might really enrage you and you know, you can't expect that it's gonna happen right away. You're gonna be able to pull yourself out of that. But then you sit back like we did now and you go back and look at it after the fact and say, how might I have reacted differently? And you begin to play that that story in your head differently. And then that's what they call pre-framing. So now, you know, we pre-frame the fight before we get in the fight, right? We have the story in our head about how I'm going to deal with this person once I come face to face with them. But if we pre-frame the positive stuff and how we're not going to react negatively, then that's becomes our new storyline. And we just begin kind of fulfilling that part of the drama too. I don't know if that helps or not, but yeah, it takes time. It's a gradual thing. But you know, you have to do it. You have to do it when you're not enraged. You have to do it when you've got the opportunity to sit either in the morning or day or whatever time it is good for you and practice these things. Begin just kind of working on them.
I was just going to say that in addition to that, or yes, and like, I love the idea of what you just said, like the pre-framing and how we set ourselves up to either deal with situations gracefully or not gracefully. I had a situation that we all shared, and I think the commonality in all of our stories was that, you know, there's human suffering, and then we contributed to that suffering, and we could have been better about that situation,
oh, yeah.
You know, and my scenario, I took what we talked about last week, and it didn't help me in the exact moment of the situation, but afterwards I was able to be a little bit more graceful in apologizing for something that happened.
Huge, yeah.
And it's a big deal, you know. My family comes from Puerto Rico, and I've really been struggling with all the images of suffering and everything that's happening.
Yeah.
And my parents called me with good news and told me that so-and-so had spoken to so-and-so and that they were okay, that our immediate family members were okay. But I was still worked up about all the people that I couldn't help. And worked up, I realized after the fact, that I hadn't stayed connected to those people and help them before a tragedy happened. So I yelled at them because they couldn't tell me enough people that I could help with a generator or send it to them or something like that. Mm. And I realized that it was about me. And that situation was not about me at all. So I think that what you say is really powerful, and I guess it's obvious that, you know, my elephant is not up the hill yet.
No. None of us are.
Right. I could work on that still and take that insight and apply it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we play the negative stories over and over. Going forward too, right? We have those all figured out. But our mind, I mean, that's just kind of, we're hardwired to think negative kind of thing.
I would just like to share what has worked for me personally for the last few years. I think being aware, I'll just talk about the anger issue because that's the most common for all of us. But it takes practice. I think I started about 6 years back. I think I have made some progress, but it is a long journey to go. But being aware that we get angry is the first thing. When I just started working on it, I would get angry, and it was after the matter of a fact that, oh, I got angry. Why didn't I behave as I expected myself to? But then after a while, I started having that awareness in the moment of anger, and, you know, I started at least being aware. You know, that was the first step in the moment of anger. And then depending upon whether it was a professional or a personal situation, you know, I could restrain myself, or for me, the way I react to it is I just shut down myself. I just don't respond, you know, because I don't want to say words which would hurt people and I would regret later on. And then as I have moved forward in my journey, I've also realized that sometimes, you know, extreme things happen and I get mad about it and I don't want to, you know, I know it. My head is telling me I shouldn't be getting mad. This is not good for me. But I'm not able to bring myself down from that anger, annoyance, and upset. But what has worked for me is I just go and listen to a lecture. You know, we all have kind of gurus or our teachers who impact us in life. So I'll just go and listen to a lecture by her, 30 minutes, and I'll come down from here to here. I mean, you know, so maybe just if, you know, those kind of things. We have to see what works for us. And different things work for different people.
Yeah, it's practice, you know, and it's opportunity to work with stuff that's inside our head, because we're not going to change things that are going on out there, right? We'd like to think that we could engineer the world the way we want it, but, you know, all we can do is change what's going on in our own head, really. fully. That's what you have control of. That's what we fully have control of. So, all right, I've got one more meditation that I want you to, and this is another one that is in the handout or on the website. It's called 9-round breathing. So it's a visualization, kind of like the body scan that we did the first time. So you have to kind of visualize this, and I'm going to have you, you're going to end up breathing in one side of your nose, breathing in through the left nostril or the right nostril, and exhaling through the left, and then we'll switch. Inhale through the right, exhale through the left, okay? And I'll talk you through that, and then we'll do 3 rounds of both sides. So if you want to get yourself in your proper position, back straight, head up, chin down, eyes closed, hands comfortable, take a few big breaths in and out, kind of let go of everything. This is a good meditation to do at home if you're trying to increase your concentration and relax at the same time before you do your meditation. So, imagine there are 3 channels about the size of soda straws. They kind of attach to each other, and they start, the central one, which is blue, starts right at your eyebrows, curves up along the top of your skull, down the center of your spine, and ends just below your navel. That's the blue channel. And then the right side, the right channel starts at your nostril. It's red. And it follows the same path. And then there's a white channel that starts at your left nostril and follows the same path. Now, with your index finger, I want you to hold the left nostril closed and breathe into the right. And then hold the right nostril closed and exhale through the left. And imagine as you exhale, all the impurities leaving your body. Repeat that 3 times. In through the right, out through the left. And each time, imagine the impurities leaving as you exhale. Now I want you to hold the right nostril closed and inhale through the left. And exhale through the right. And again, imagine all the impurities leaving. And then I want you to inhale through both channels and exhale through both. And again, as you exhale 3 times, imagine all the impurities leaving your body. And then just focus on your breathing for a few minutes. was kind of a short session, but we're running out of time. So just a brief period of time that we meditated afterwards, did you find that it helped with your concentration? Some people, this is a really good meditation to do at the beginning. So actually our homework for next time is to do, to work, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or whatever you can do on Mind Like the Sky or Mind Like the Ocean. And try starting with the 9-round breathing, you know, before you do the meditation. And then try to get in the habit of, again, if you can find a location, a special time or special place that you sit, a certain time during the day, begin to develop some patterns, some habits to your practice if you can. Okay. And again, you try to set a motivation for why you're going. And then, you know, think about, you know, you came here tonight to learn this, to learn how to improve your minds. And then, you know, think about all the people that you're going to benefit from that, not just yourself, but family, friends, that gradually, coworkers, right? Things will begin to kind of change and you can improve your relationships with those people too. Any questions or comments? It is 8:29, so we got done early. Thank you all.
You're welcome.